Hey guys, this is Carrie Bartholomew coming at you, and in studio today I have two resident UNO actors. Do you guys want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Andy Prescott. I'm a senior here at UNO, and I'm also in Radio 2, so I have my Monday night show. But I'm playing Gloucester in Part 1, Foreign Flames.
Hi, I'm Samantha Moshek. I am a junior here at UNO, and I am playing Warwick in Part 1, Foreign Flames, at UNO.
So, War of Roses is the next UNO theater production that's coming up the beginning of November. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about your character at all? Characters?
Sure. I could talk about Gloucester to start. Gloucester is the uncle to the newborn king. The newborn king? He's only 9 months old when he gets the crown, so... Gloucester is there as the protector of the realm, as the protector to his young son. And it's funny, if you are a fan of Game of Thrones, you can actually draw a lot of parallels between the events that happen in War of Roses and that show. So if you were to draw a parallel between the protector and Henry VI, you could absolutely do that with that show. But anyway, Gloucester, he's the Duke, so Duke of Gloucester. His actual name is Humphrey, and he just looks after the king. He's basically the interim king, if you will, until Henry VI is old enough. And he's ambitious, but he's not trying to get more power. I think he's more ambitious in the sense that he's maintaining his power and keeping his power in the court. And he rubs up the wrong way against his uncle, the Cardinal. And so there's a lot of kind of this childish bickering that happens between the Cardinal character, who's played by Ankita Ashrit, and myself. And there is just this butting of heads all the time in court, and it's a very ugly scene. It's not becoming of people who are of high status, of high importance, of regal importance. And you see kind of this character arc and how he's not a very good politician in terms of backstabbing. There could have been a possibility where he could have just gotten rid of Henry VI and became king himself. But he didn't do that. He, you know, paved the way for his son, but no one's really ready for Henry VI to take the crown. I think Gloucester, that's part of his fault, is that he doesn't get the prince ready for the crown. He just rules as best as he can and never really has that moment of teaching, of getting him prepared. So, and the whole court is in agreement that he's not ready for the crown. They'll fight for it in terms of butting out others who are trying to take it, but no one is really ready for him to take the crown. So that's that struggle, that power, that Game of Thrones kind of feeling that everyone's trying to go after the crown. And Gloucester is in the mix, but he's not as well-versed in terms of backstabbing, in terms of backdoor dealings and everything. So yeah, that's basically Gloucester in a nutshell.
Wow, that sounds epic. Game of Thrones, love me some Game of Thrones.
I'm playing Warwick in A War of Roses, and originally he is a male character, but in this production we are actually portraying him as a female. So that's something very interesting to bring to the table.
Woman power.
Yes, always. Feminism. So something interesting about Warwick is that back in when all of this was happening, Warwick held a lot of power when it came to armies. So he had a lot of men on his side. You know, he held a lot of land. He was considered the kingmaker. So he brought a lot of people to power. He helped them hold their power. And he was intended to be kind of like the most influential man in England at the time that never held the crown. So within A War of Roses, a lot of people look to him or her for guidance on what to do when there's so many different people that are arguing over who is supposed to be taking the crown and who should be in charge, who should be helping. Everybody's always asking Warwick what she thinks, and I think that's really important to show that almost in a feminine role. She's also a relative to the king. It's not as directly related as Gloucester. She also brings a lot of people to trial, and kind of points out when they're making mistakes or when they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. She calls them out. And that's also really fun for us to kind of bring out those masculine qualities of strength that we typically perceive as masculine, but bringing them into a feminine character and kind of seeing how that changes the script a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No, that'd definitely be so cool. Just laying down the law, like, fight me, son. Like,
it's something, I dare you. It's something that I really relate to in my own personal personality. So it's nice to bring that out in a character, but also try to challenge myself in creating more of a masculine way of walking and talking and gesturing. We've been working on that a little bit tonight, actually. So that was fun.
And another cool thing is her and I went to London for a school trip. So if you want to talk about...
Yeah, that was specifically amazing to me because we actually visited the Castle of Warwick. Oh. So I got to be in the place that my character lived and reigned, sort of, not reigned, but you know.
But that's like, that's a, such a, like a cool experience. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm so connected to my character. Like, I've been here.
It was like a weird out of body kind of experience when, you know, you're walking through and you're reading all these things about Richard Neville was his name and all the different things that he did and kind of connecting it, except that time we had our scripts. So I knew what to expect and it was nice to kind of make the parallels and see kind of the context behind it. So that was really interesting.
Oh yeah, for sure. So War of Roses, I don't think, it's not like one of the more like commonly known Shakespeare's play. I can talk, guys, I swear. Can you just kind of like give a brief summary about like the overall plot?
Sure. So the War of Roses, like I said, a lot of people draw a lot of war contexts in terms of like medieval battles and plot devices from the War of Roses, especially Game of Thrones. And so it's actually a mixture of plays. The era runs from Henry V, and our play actually takes place, it starts with his last speech, and then runs all the way through all Henry VI parts 1, 2, and 3, and then ends with Richard III's first speech, the first words of his opening monologue. And so it is the struggle between the two roses. And you want to talk about the roses?
Yeah, sure. So part one here at UNO kind of sets it up and Creighton sort of elaborates more on the conflict. So the name Foreign Flames comes from the fight between the English and the French. And so a lot of the conflict, a lot of the battles have to do with the English and the French. But what's happening in between all of this is that the English are fighting with each other. So Gloucester and the Cardinal, and then Suffolk and Somerset, and myself, Warwick, and then York are all kind of battling each other. And so it's this huge thing of like, how are these people going to see us? We're going to look weak if they know that we're fighting each other. And so it's very interesting to kind of see that not only can there be war in between two different countries, but within each other and how that sort of, it crumbles, it brings new strength afterwards. It's a very complex script. So that'll be interesting to see.
And it's a very, it's a chess piece type of, or it's a chess game in terms of the internal struggle for the fires within, or the fire within for part two. So you start to begin to see that tension build, and actually one of the court members loses his life in the process of the Game of Thrones or the struggle. So I always bring that up because I love that show, and I think there's so many, like if you are a fan of the show, you should definitely see War of Roses because it's so true to what you can be like, oh, that's Joffrey. Oh, he's Kit Harington. Oh, yes. He's the Kingslayer. So it's really cool to be like, oh, that character is based off of it. And literally of the two houses, the two lines that are claiming the two houses, yeah. You have York and you have Lancaster. Or in Game of Thrones, it's Lannister.
Lannister,
that's how close.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
The book series is actually based off of the story of the Wars of the Roses. It's the Hundred Years' War. Really? So yeah, it's not completely related. Some of the things may not directly parallel each other, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of articles online that you can go and look up and maybe do some research before you come and check it out.
It wasn't called the War of Roses until well after, about 100 years after, maybe or less, but a significantly amount of time after the events happened. And it was more of a symbolic thing because of, I don't have the artist's name in front of me, but he kind of depicted the White Rose and the Red Rose, and then the Tudor era comes out of the War of Roses, and it's the combination of both. And so there's a symbolic scene that she's a part of, and a lot of the main characters that are looking for who's the rightful heir to the throne, and it's all about bloodlines, and there's a big, it actually goes through twice in our play, and I think once or twice in part two, where they sit there and they name off bloodlines and talk about who came from who, came from what, married who, killed who to get what. So it's, and they we slow it down and we try to get everyone on the same page because it isn't
very intricate.
Yeah. And it, and there's actually a joke where it gets so intricate that he could just say, spot off a number of names and people go, yeah, all right, that makes sense.
Like, yeah, okay.
He sounded official when he said that.
I would definitely do that if someone was just like naming names at me. I'm just like, yeah, no, sure. Yeah, sure. No, I believe it. I believe it.
So there's a symbolic scene at the funeral of Henry V, just before the crowning of Henry VI, where they're plucking roses off of the casket. And if you pluck a red rose, because everyone's afraid to say, I think it's you, I think it's you. Instead, they just silently pick a rose to say that I'm on the side of Lancaster, I'm on the side of York, of who should become the next king. Who is the rightful king in terms of blood, in terms of right?
It's just like those little details in plays that make it like super interesting, because it's like that's one of those things that like a lot of people just skip over, but like if you know the details, it's super cool.
Oh, and it's great too because we have a great dramaturgical team. If anyone was able to check out Shakespeare's Dog that just closed last weekend, we had a whole case full of great dramaturgical work, research into the concepts behind the dogs of that era, behind Shakespeare and how he grew up in Stratford-upon-Avon. And then in our play as well, we have the same dramaturgical team, literally, doing the same great work. And so there's going to be, if you look in the lobby of Weber Fine Arts Building next to the box office, you'll see three cases next to each other that you can look at the information and kind of build an understanding of everything beforehand. And also our programs are pretty elaborate. And you could also read about it, I think, NebraskaShakespeare.org or something. There's a bunch of information on there as well. So, or you could read the plays. And that's also good.
Either or. Okay, so earlier you guys mentioned a part one and a part two, which also gets into, this isn't only just a UNO production, but it's also a collaboration between Creighton and Nebraska Shakespeare. Can you guys kind of go into how this collaboration worked and like the differences between part one and part two of this play?
Yeah, so a while ago, Nebraska Shakespeare sat down, actually 3 or 4 years ago, and decided that they really wanted to celebrate the anniversary of Shakespeare's death in a big way. And part of that was to recognize two founding departments that helped create Nebraska Shakespeare, which is Creighton University's Theater Department and UNO's Theater Department. And so by doing that, we've split this compilation of many plays into two. And UNO is doing part one and Creighton is doing part two. But the really creative part about it is that there are a lot of opportunities that have been taken to bring in Creighton students to the UNO Theater Department and vice versa. And also by bringing back alumni that have worked with Nebraska Shakespeare and both theater departments and kind of putting some of them in both productions, which is a little bit chaotic and intense, I'm sure, for them, but they're mastering it quite well. So there's that, of course. And then I lost my train of thought.
So and I could pick it up. It's kind of a homecoming for both theater departments at Creighton and at UNO. We have, like Sam said, we have students that are crisscrossing between the two schools. We have faculty that are acting in it as well. We have student designers, we have faculty designers. And what's great is that Amy Lane is directing the Creighton production. And some of us that may not have an opportunity as a student to work with her, because we do UNO shows, are actually over there. I think it's a good half a dozen of our actors are over there. And we pulled over about a half a dozen as well. So it's an opportunity for Creighton students to get direction under D. Scott Glasser, who's directing part one, and then for our students to go over and get direction from Amy Lane. And like Sam said, there's alumni that are starring it. And then it's also an opportunity to work with Vincent Carlson Brown, who's the artistic director for Nebraska Shakespeare. He's doing the fight choreography. He's the one that wrote the original concept of, not the original concept, but the retelling of these of this story amongst two parts. So he's the writer, he's the fight choreographer, he's also acting in both shows in two small roles. So he's got his plate full. And what's great about him is that he also does Shakespeare on the Green, which also casts Creighton and UNO students as well. And so it's a good collaboration, good networking tool. There's some professional actors that we're bringing in that, but everyone at some point came through UNO or came through Creighton and is now coming back home. So it's fun to have those varying levels of professional experience or lack of thereof and collaborating with them.
There's so. Also a lot of parallels, not only between the script, there are some scenes within the script for UNO's production that resurface in Creighton's production. So if you see both, it's very cool to kind of pick up on how they're repeating, and it'll be different because it's a completely different person playing that role, but also you'll see some parallels between that. And another really cool thing is the scenic and costume design, something that we're kind of playing off of the strengths of each department. So UNO has a black box theater, and our set is very much where the audience is very close to us, and there's going to be some, not I guess interaction directly, but it's going to feel a lot more intimate. And they have a proscenium stage, which is more of like a stage raised up, and the audience is kind of sitting, you know, in the seats,
Creighton
kind
does.
Of Creighton lower.
Has
Creighton has this. Yeah.
Like
and
a traditional,
so,
like,
a traditional theater
setting.
And so their set is going to be utilized in different ways. I'm not necessarily sure because I'm not in the rehearsal process there, but it'll be very different and unique that way. Also, the costume designs here are going to be contemporary with
flair.
contemporary with a, with a touch of traditional, what yeah. it would look like back then, and then it's flipped there. So it's a very traditional look at Creighton with a contemporary touch.
Yeah.
So that's also cool. It's going to be very different takes, which will get the mind kind of working about what all of this means. Is it relevant to what's going on today?
I get to wear
it's up to it's up to everybody else that's watching.
I get to wear a utila kilt. It's a kilt with cargo pockets. And it's pretty awesome.
I get to wear my nose ring and a lot of cool piercings that I have in my ears, which is awesome. So
That'd be so cool. Whenever I did theater in high school, they were all just like, take out your piercings. I'm like, but do I have to?
Yeah, I haven't gotten to use them for a show. So this is, it's not where I would think that I would get to use them. So that's where it's really cool for me. So
because you're just like, I'm here. I've got all my piercings.
Don't have to put retainers in or have them close up by accident or something. So
yeah. Oh, this will be such like a cool, fun experience for you guys. Like, no, I lost my train of thought. So when are the dates of the show?
Yeah, so part one, Four in Flames, we have preview on November 2nd, and then we'll have opening night November 3rd through the 5th, and that'll be at 7:30 p.m. And then the following weekend, on that same weekend, November 6th, we'll have a matinee show at 2 p.m., as well as the following weekend on the 12th and 13th. And what's special about that is that A Fire Within Part 2 at Creighton opens during our run. It opens November 9th, or preview is at November 9th, and then the show runs from 11th through the 13th, and the 17th through the 19th at 7:30, and then they have one 2 p.m. showing on the 20th. And so on the 12th and the 13th, you can actually watch both shows.
Double feature.
A double feature. So if you want to just overwhelm yourself with Shakespeare. By the way.
What better way to do it than just doing it all in one day? Just like, this is my Shakespeare day, November 12th or 13th. Like, Shakespeare.
And so, yeah. And the 12th and the 13th, you can do a 2 p.m. show at UNO. Go to House of Loom for kind of a breakdown. Grab a drink, grab some food. And then go to the Creighton show at 7:30 on that night. And we mentioned earlier that it's the death of Shakespeare. It's the 400th anniversary of his death. And what's special about Sam and I is that we actually went to the Stratford-upon-Avon where he grew up earlier this spring for a class trip. So we mentioned that, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of cool Shakespeare stuff going on all over London. a lot of exhibits.
Oh, drunk Shakespeare, which was fun.
Oh, if there's any reason to go to London, or not London, but like Shakespeare's birthplace for the 400th anniversary. That would be perfect, the reason, yeah. Drunk Shakespeare.
It was a good time.
They also have the Globe Theater, which is to the best of their ability. They recreated the theater. It's open top the theater, open, and it's all in the round. It's the round theater, but it has kind of like a thrust kind of platform. And it was really cool to stand there. We watched a Midsummer Night's Dream there.
Very interactive.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was fed a banana.
Yeah.
By one of the castmates. It was really great. Just a magical, like, trip. And it was the perfect time to go. Especially us. Mm. We had been pre-cast for War of Roses, so we knew... All right, we got to go to London. So it was excellent.
And for Shakespeare's dog, the guy that played Shakespeare in the show was also on the trip with us. So it was really cool for him to kind of be like, "Oh, this is where I was born." Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I actually got to interview him for an Omaha News story, and he mentioned that, and I was just like, "That's so cool!" Like. Yeah. That's awesome.
There's nothing, you don't really get that many opportunities to do something like that. So it was really nice that we got to seize that and kind of take advantage of the knowledge that was offered us there.
We talked to some people and they're like, Nebraska, what are you doing here? Yeah.
That's when I was corrected on the pronunciation of my character's name. It's written as it's Warwick, but it's pronounced Warwick. And we got told like a million times it's Warwick. And so Warwick. Now it's like drilled into my head.
Yeah, no, for sure. I went abroad in France a couple summers ago, and I was just like, "Yeah, I'm from Nebraska," and they're just like, "What's a Nebraska?" I'm just like, it's in the United States, and they're just like, "Oh yeah, I know the United States. Have you been to New York?"
Like, yep, that's the one they know for sure.
Yeah. So reason number one to see these performances is because it's a lot like Game of Thrones. Throw out some other reasons to see these.
Oh, geez. I mean, if anything, if you're not a Shakespeare fan, or if you are, you got to see it. It's his 400th anniversary. The language is magical. Like, he is a master poet in terms of the English language and how he crafted it. I mean, there's hundreds of words that he invented, that he created, and we still use. There is a poster, there's all these mugs and everything in London that they sell that says
Swagger.
Yeah.
Shakespeare.
all of these phrases, all of these idiomatic phrases that we use nowadays came from Shakespeare, and we don't even realize it. So it's just that he's a master of, he's the most produced playwright in the world. And so if you want just a little touch of artistic expression, or just to watch some great work that's being done by two schools. It's the first time that all three of us have collaborated. First time that Creighton and UNO have cross-pollinated on different shows. Mm-hmm. It's something to check out. And there's a lot of great work. We started early. We're giving ourselves about 6 weeks to work on this, and duly so, because it's important. So there's a lot of great work. If you want to see just the repurposing of the stage, if you saw Shakespeare's Dog, you're gonna want to see this. We're busting holes in it.
Visually interesting. There'll be some fire. Not gonna say much more, but
like, love me some
maybe,
fire.
Yeah,
like some sweet fire effects.
Yeah,
and light. Like, our lighting designer is premier. Like, he has done some amazing stuff with lights, and
the fire will be done with lights.
Yes,
but it's not gonna be the way that a lot of people will think. I think it's gonna shock.
It's gonna shock a lot of people, and it's gonna be a very powerful
thing.
Yeah,
so it's gonna leave you wanting to see the second part when you see that moment. Another reason to see it is that it's free for UNO students.
Yeah.
It's free. part of the cultural enrichment fee. So, you know, some students
paid for it. Go.
Yes. Yeah. But also, it's just, you know, some people just don't have the money. You know, tickets are so expensive, especially when you're in college. Yeah. So if it's there, you know, go out with some friends, just try something new, see what we're offering out here. Because I feel like some students don't really get to experience our department a whole lot. And I think you guys would be amazed by the kind of stuff that, and not just the students, but the faculty and everybody as a whole can create. It's just the things that we're doing over there, not to brag, but...
But no, it's okay to brag.
Some cool
it's okay
stuff.
To brag. You're on the radio. You
I mean, I'll talk about the tech... The, the technical students that are involved in the art. Mm-hmm. We go to the KCACTF, which is this theater conference, this National Theater Conference, and the UNO goes through and we sweep every time. We always win technical
hair,
elements.
Costume, hair, lighting,
costume, lighting,
stage management.
Stage management, sound design, prop design. We go there and we kick butt. We take names. We go home, we learn those names, we go back, and we throw it in their face, and we win again. No,
something to brag about.
It is, and
they're doing great things.
We do
the
great
technical
things.
Theaters are just...
Oh, it's so, so powerful. We're so good at technical theater, and it makes the show so much fun. I mean, if you saw Shakespeare's Dog, that's real wood that they had on there, but then they repainted it to make it look like wood from Stratford-upon-Avon in the 1500s. So it's just magical, like the setting that they put you in it. And as an actor, I just appreciate that so much. And I know if I go on to other places afterwards, I'm going to be like, yeah, UNO had it right. They did some great stuff.
We did it right.
Yeah.
With such a unique space, we have such an advantage of doing things that not a lot of other people get to do in college theater.
Yeah.
When it comes to lighting, I mean, the shape of the room is just different. And so it's a whole different creative process. And I think, you know, the Creighton students, we took them into the theater when Shakespeare's Dog was rehearsing, and they were just like, wow, look at this place. It's so different. And I think for some of the students here at UNO that have never been in the theater would think the same thing. It's not your traditional auditorium. It's not.
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I went into it the first time. I was just like, oh, this is what a black box is. Like, yeah. This is really cool. I'm like, so close to the stage, like this never happens.
Yeah, and it's what's great is that if it's your first time, it's pretty overwhelming because you're like, wow, I never imagined. But if you keep going, you see how we transform the space every time. Not only upon that, you see actors that you've seen at other shows. So if you saw myself in Qui-Don last year, we're in this show and we're completely different characters doing completely different research and work. And, you know, if you go back and you watch these other shows that we've been in, you see the growth for these students. So, I mean, you could track along if you're a freshman and you're like, all right, I want to see what this is about. And you keep, even if you just went to one show a semester or one show a year, you're going to see these actors that you saw before. And you never know, they can go on to become big names in movies or in plays. And you can be like, I saw them when they were a student at UNO.
So
like,
that's why you always need to introduce yourself to the actors, because then you can be like, hey, remember me? Remember that one time?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
So, and we also have alumni that are doing great work in the theater world.
Yeah.
We have professional actors that are working with us alongside to make us even better, to make us look better. So, it's just a lot of great work that's going into the show, and I think you gotta see it.
I don't think there's ever gonna be something like this again.
For a while,
you know.
Yeah.
I think
400 years when it's Shakespeare's 800.
Absolutely, there you go.
I think there will be plenty of opportunities for us to collaborate again, and I'm sure it'll happen again. But I don't think anything will be quite the same as what we're doing right now. It's a very unique experience.
Unique.
You
Absolutely.
Don't want to miss out on it at all.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. It was great talking with you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, you guys have a lovely day. I'm going to be on Amazon finding a Swagger Shakespeare mug. Bye, guys.